And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, the president, that is to say Trump, is not gone yet, but his legacy has already started. We had, this week, the first of the new Trump majority rulings out of the Supreme Court. I'm sure you followed it. What do you think?
Well, there's a couple of things. We actually had a couple of Trump judges make rulings, but Amy Coney Barrett is doing exactly what people had said she was doing. She's a theocrat, and she fits in with that Clarence Thomas and Alito and Gorsuch wing of the Federalist Society. And what they did was they took a New York case that had effectively been mooted because the situation changed in New York and the New York State authorities changed their position. And she turned it into a religion trumps everything else type of opinion. Traditionally, the courts have said that in areas of public safety, the government has a role to play and has a duty to try to protect the people. And here they paid lip service to that idea, but said, but when it comes to religious organizations, the organizations can basically set their own rules within a very wide swath. And they ruled for the Catholic Church and an Orthodox Jewish group, saying that the restrictions on how many people can gather were unconstitutional, particularly in face of the fact that other businesses didn't have such restrictions, but other businesses weren't, some other businesses weren't in the same position as, you know, you weren't going to get 500 people attending a barbershop, you know, or a bicycle shop piece of business. You have people congregating together.
And singing.
Singing, praying out loud, doing things.
Doing things that causes spit to come out of your mouth, even microscopic bits of spit.
Yeah, and the interesting part was the day after the opinion, there was an op-ed in the New York Times from the Pope saying essentially that the government had this right and that religion should be cognizant of this. I actually heard a lecture from a rabbi this week online talking about the respect for Judaism has for local laws. He said, as long as it doesn't violate one of your basic tenets of your religion, the government laws rule. The government says you can't have polygamy. You go along with that. The government says you can't you can't slaughter animals according to the kosher laws. That's as long as you can bring in kosher food from other places, you go along with the government restrictions. And these are matters of life and death, but this is a foreshadowing of what we can expect here as we see more and more of these theocratic rulings coming out of the court. This goes back to the bakers who didn't want to bake a cake for a gay couple. And
the right wing always goes on and on and on about how bad activist judges are. And I never understood activist judges as a slogan to attack judges, because I mean, if he's awake, he's active. What you're really talking about is legislating judges. And that's what the Supreme Court does. It legislates without having to get elected by the people. It's an anti-democratic legislature. That's what it amounts to. That's the problem, and that's what these five guys are, and this woman are. They are anxious to be legislating judges, that nobody can overrule, and they can enforce in their case, a form of Christian theological law, which they all believe right. is what should rule the country, this country.
Yeah. And it's not even mainstream Christian.
No.
But it's...
Well, as you say, the Pope doesn't agree with it.
Yeah, but
unless
what
maybe
does he
the Pope's
know,
right? not mainstream, I don't know.
Yeah, what does he know? Yeah. What does he know in these regards? Now, of course, the interesting part about Trump judges was this week we had a ruling from the Third Circuit Court of Appeals in Pennsylvania from the lower court decision that had come out of the Middle District, which is our district. And don't forget, in that case, the most conservative Republican Federalist judge in the district ruled against Trump on the election.
That's very interesting because nobody has pointed out the background of that judge.
Yeah. He was a Republican operative, the Federalist Society and everything. Now, he was appointed by Obama, but the reason he was appointed by Obama was there was a deal. We have one Republican and one Democratic senator. And what happened was the two of them have been on court appointments have been pretty well working together. And what they say is you get one and I get one. And Obama went along with the deal. It was the Democrat got someone he wanted appointed. And the Republican, Pat Toomey, got this Judge Brand appointed. And that's how that worked. But anyway, Brand's opinion, which was very sharp and to the point and basically said, Rudy Giuliani didn't know what he was talking about, and the president's case had no merit. They took that up to the Third Circuit, and there they get a three-judge panel who happen to be all Republicans. And the judge that wrote the opinion was a Trump appointee, a Judge Bibas. And he pulled a Brand, in essence, very quickly said, you have to have proof, and there is no proof here. And this is a democracy, and we're not going to overturn the will of the people, millions of votes, on just mere allegations. You have to show us something, and you didn't. But of course, this was part of the strategy of the Trump and Giuliani, I don't want to say wing, but their ideas was they don't really care about these lower court decisions. They've now lost something like 36 or 38 of them. Their whole idea, Trump's whole idea, is to get to the Supreme Court as quickly as possible, where he feels he's appointed three judges, and he thinks that those three judges are going to form with the, along with Alito and Thomas, are going to give him the election, that they're going to tell the American people that 80 million votes don't count, that they were all frauds and fraudulent. Of course, the interesting part is that in these cases, they're not even pleading fraud. They're just
not in most of the cases. In none of the cases.
Yeah.
In none of the cases. That's the whole point. They make the Giuliani gets in front of the microphones before he walks into the courtroom, and he yells fraud, fraud, fraud. Then he goes into the courtroom and tells the judge, "This case does not involve fraud." It's just that naked, a duplicitous lying act by these lawyers. Why don't they lose their license?
Well, because their pleadings don't conform to what they've said outside of court. And I think Giuliani is going to have problems elsewhere about his license, but he doesn't really care. He's at the end of his career. And right now, this is all about the grift. It's all about the money. He's been asking for $20,000 a day. He's out there for publicity because he wants what he set up after he left the mayorship, the think tank or whatever it is that he's running, his business, to get more business. He just wants his name out there as somebody who's a big macher, as we say. And
but his name is out there in the most disreputable fashion. I mean, it's not like it's building his reputation when you have mascara running down your cheeks when you. Say things that are plainly ridiculous when you can't know the difference between the Four Seasons Hotel and the Four Seasons Landscaping Club. Why would anybody who needs help turn to you?
Well, people don't pay that much attention to it overseas. That's where he does a lot of his business. And he's telling people what they want to hear. He's playing to them. Dictators and authoritarians and demagogues don't really care about these little details. They want someone who's going to puff them up and who's going to amplify their message. And that's what he's doing. He and this Sidney Powell.
Oh, she's a piece of work.
Oh, yeah. Mike Flynn's lawyer, who's been promising some sort of conspiracy theory involving a guy who's been dead for 7 years. But again, she's in there for her reputation as well, to try to just to get her name out there.
But even Trump fired this dopey woman. She's really dopey.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that is also behind one of the reasons he did the pardon. Remember, Flynn and Powell have been saying, we don't want a pardon. We want to be vindicated in court. We've got all these proofs and all these conspiracies, and we want to let the court system pay off. And I think Trump is looking at this and said, this lady can't prove anything in court. I better do my pardoning now, and started with Powell. I'm sorry, started with Flynn, who's a despicable person.
Well, is he any worse than Manafort?
In different ways. In different ways. Don't forget, Manafort was just a political operative. Flynn was the national security advisor. He's the guy that was meeting the Russians while he was on taking money from them. He was with taking money.
Oh, he
money
was on the Turkish payroll while he was.
The Turks. That's what got him in trouble. He didn't register as a foreign agent.
Yeah. He couldn't have been the national security advisor and a foreign agent at the same time, right?
Well, not officially.
Well, there you go.
So not officially.
So therefore, lie about whatever you have to lie about. Can't lie about being the national security advisor. That's your public job.
He's the guy that was out there yelling, lock her up with no crimes or evidence. So in some ways,
you think
really
that Trump's plan to get elected or to get selected was, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead, just get to the Supreme Court?
That was plan A.
Can he get to the Supreme Court? Now, he lost this case in Pennsylvania, and Giuliani immediately said, we're going to the Supreme Court. Can he get there? And if he got there, what would happen?
Well, he can ask the Supreme Court. Now, the first case we talked about, the New York case, the religious case, Chief Justice Roberts dissented, and his dissent was, we shouldn't have taken this case because it was no longer a real case in controversy.
It was moot, right? Isn't that a reason they don't take cases? Moot?
Right, right. But the activist judges took it in order to make a point. We now have probably four votes for people who, for judges at least, the three Democrats and Roberts might not even want to take the case, but it only takes four votes to say we're going to take it. A lot of people didn't think that they were going to take the previous case about Trump's tax returns and whether Congress could get them or whether the prosecutor could get them. And they did take it. So we'll have to see. But the likelihood of them taking the case is it's greater than zero, but it's a lot less than 100. But it's not out of the question. It's not out of the question just because of the nature of these people on the court. But they could very easily say, no, we're not going to take it. The Third Circuit opinion saying that there's no evidence is fine, and they can avoid a lot of controversy. And then Trump is left with plan B, which is trying to get the legislatures to overturn the electoral college or the people who are electors to the electoral college.
But hasn't he already lost on that? The people in Michigan said they weren't going to do it. People in Pennsylvania said they weren't going to do it.
Right. And they're just keeping this hope alive because Trump's on the grift for this as well. Don't forget, he's collecting money for these appeals. And in the fine print, he's saying most of this money isn't going to go for the appeals.
Right.
Most of this money is going to go to my political campaign money. By the way, he did spend $3 million in Wisconsin, which Biden only won by about 20,000 votes, to recount the votes only in the Milwaukee area. They only want to recount votes in areas where big cities where blacks vote in heavy numbers, Philadelphia, Detroit, Milwaukee. And now they've come out with the recount there in Detroit. I'm sorry, in Milwaukee, and turns out Biden gained 132 votes. They want to recount in Atlanta again. There have already been three counts in Atlanta or in Georgia, and the results aren't going to change, and they haven't changed.
Well, if the Supreme Court is going to take his case, they got to do it in the next week or two, right? If they don't do it in the next week or two, it doesn't matter. There's nothing to take.
December 14th, the Electoral College votes. And, of course, Trump said the first thing he said is, well, if the Electoral College votes for Biden, then I'll leave the White House, as if he has a choice. And then he backed off that and says, well, Biden has to prove he got 80 million votes.
Why does Biden have to do that at all? He doesn't have to do that.
He doesn't.
No.
Yeah. The same way Trump doesn't have to prove he got 73 million votes, although that's a scary number to think 73 to 74 million people actually voted for him, knowing everything. We know that there's a base. Yeah. We know that there's 30 to 40%. But you also look at the percentage, and it came out to about 47%. Last time, what did it get, 46%?
46%, right. So
wasn't that much more. But Biden got 51% this time.
Right.
Part of that is because of the weakness of the third parties.
Right.
You didn't have Jill Stein there siphoning off votes, and the Libertarian couldn't even get on the ballot
right.
in a number of states.
But COVID continues its rampage.
Yeah.
We had, last week we had officially 260-some-odd thousand dead. Officially 2,200 died in one day. I think you told me that that's more than in any single day's casualties during the Civil War, America's bloodiest war.
Yep.
I mean, and it's unbelievable.
And it continues to rise, and it's spreading. And
everybody says it's going to get more and more because of the Thanksgiving holiday, where not enough people paid attention to staying home.
That's it. People, they have this COVID fatigue, and they want to get out and see family. And we're just going to see larger numbers. The thing is, and it goes back to the Trump vote, how people who really should know better, governors, are unwilling to do what is necessary in order to stop this pandemic. The governor of South Dakota just won't change her mind that we're not going to require social distancing. We're going to be wide open. We're not going to require masks. None of this, as more and more people get sick and dying in our hospitals, become overcrowded and the system breaks down. The governor of Florida again did the same thing. He said he won't let municipalities, the local governments that Republicans always talk about, the local vote is more important than the national vote. He won't let them put in any more harsher restrictions than what he does, and he's not putting in any restrictions. It's not comprehensible as to why they're doing this, except for their ideology. But the Americans are paying the price, and there is a price. It's not just who dies, it's the breakdown of the healthcare system, which is tremendous. It's the businesses that are hurt by having employees not being there and having to retrain them or close down, or business owners getting sick and having to shut down. All these second and third level problems.
And also medical problems, because for every person who dies, there are so many cases of permanent heart disease, so many cases of all other kinds of disease. I think there are, for everyone who dies, there's at least 30 or 40 long-term, maybe lifelong cases of permanent illness of one sort or another that accompanies this thing. So
they're called long haul, the long haulers. They said about 20 to 30% of people who get this disease are going to have that. And we still don't know what the ramifications are, brain damage or, as you said, cardiovascular issues.
And the economy is on life support still, right?
Yeah.
Last week we had the unemployment numbers went up. Trump keeps yelling about how they're going down. Trump used to say, the day after Election Day, COVID will disappear. You won't hear anything about it, and the economy is going to bounce right back. So the day after Election Day, we had more people dying, more people infected than ever before, and more people unemployed than ever before.
But the stock market hit 30,000, and Trump came out to talk about that for about 64 seconds.
Literally 64 seconds. Literally, you're right.
Yeah. But of course, it wouldn't answer questions. One of the questions is, well, you said that if Biden got elected, the stock market was going to tank, and it's gone up. Explain that to us. The contradictions are enormous, but his people don't care. They're still buying into this.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you, but I'm not going to ask you to discuss it now, mm-hmm. but put this in the back of your head. Why is it that 77% of Trump's voters believe the election was stolen? How is that possible? I don't want to discuss it. I just want to point out that that's the fact right now. Yeah. Now, maybe that will erode over time, but at this moment, that's the fact. So now I'm getting to another point. Forget Trump for the moment. Let's stick with his movement. Biden's going to become the president, no question about it. Will McConnell, will the non-Trump Trumpists let Biden have a cabinet? Will they let him become the president in fact, not just in form? What do you think?
Well, that's a good question. You know, the way, don't forget, he let Obama have a cabinet, but he wouldn't let him have judges. And he tried to scuttle a number of things, particularly with legislation. And Obama, in the second term, had to do a lot of executive orders. Trump has governed a lot with executive orders because he hasn't even tried to get bills through. Once he got his tax breaks through, we had no infrastructure bill. We've had a hard time trying to get the bills to increase the national debt in order to finance the government and things like that. Trump has very few legislative accomplishments.
He didn't even try to negotiate them. I mean, it's not like he tried and failed. He didn't even bother to try to negotiate them. He just didn't do it.
No. Well, he didn't want to deal with Nancy Pelosi. Because, let's face it, he doesn't play well with women in power.
But was he actually himself involved in the negotiations? I mean, was it Meadows or whoever was the chief of staff?
Well, Meadows is just the latest guy.
Yeah.
The question that it should have been the vice president who had been in Congress doing that work. But you still have to. But everybody was afraid to do anything and make any decisions that Trump wouldn't approve of. They had no real leeway. They just had this ideology. But getting back to your question, will Biden get a cabinet? I think ultimately he will. Now, it's my observation that there's always one or two people who a president-elect nominates or the president nominates that run into problems and don't get confirmed. Remember John Tower?
You mean Drunken John Tower?
Drunken John Tower, yeah. Yeah, he was one example. Of course, Trump's had some problems because the people he's appointed have had so many things wrong with them. He had a Secretary of Labor that he was going to Pudsner, was that his name?
Yeah.
He couldn't get got elected. And as a matter of fact, Trump has run the government with acting people because he's had such a turnover. And of course, we've commented before that some of these people don't even have the constitutional right to be in their office. We said that.
But for the most part, it wasn't that Trump nominated people who then the Democrats held up. It was he didn't bother to nominate anybody.
Right.
He liked to have appointments, temporary appointments. He had more control that way.
Right. He didn't have to get the approval. Or if he got someone approved at a lower level, once they got through congressional approval, they could serve in another office for a certain period of time.
Right.
180 days or something like that.
Yeah.
And he was doing that. But getting back to your question, a lot depends on who Biden appoints. Right now, there doesn't seem to have been any negative reaction to the people he's put out there to a great degree. There's certainly going to be somebody somewhere along the line. It could be a Secretary of Labor, which is a key position. We still have a couple of key positions out there. We have defense, which people thought there was going to be an appointee by now, and there wasn't. And justice. And I think justice is the one you're going to really, really see something, some issues potentially over. I don't know who Biden's going to appoint there. My favorites would be Doug Jones, who was a senator and has some rapport, you would think, with some of these other senators, the Republican senators, or maybe a Preet Bharara, who has already been approved as a prosecutor. He got senatorial approval, but of course now some of his statements about Trump have made him a pariah to Republicans. We'll have to see on that. The Secretary of Commerce, Mitch McConnell, is very interested in commerce because his wife's family does a lot of commerce. They own a shipping company. And so there's somebody
the
there.
The most bizarre thing about that company is that they own a shipping company that specializes in bulk shipments of commodities to China, agricultural commodities.
Which, by the way, China pledged to buy a lot of and has only bought about half of what they pledged to President Trump there.
Well, it's not like Trump did what he was supposed to do. I mean, this is a guy who the art of the deal, according to Trump, is you renege on your side while you sue them to uphold their side.
Yeah.
That's the art. It's some art.
Yeah. Interior Department could be something because that's over lands that where there's drilling and things like that.
And that's where we had the actual armed rebellions, right? Cliven Bundy and his father.
Well, they weren't worried about drilling. They just wanted to graze for free.
Yeah, which they do.
Which they condemn socialism.
Right.
You know, they get free money from the government, or free value from the government, but don't want to pay for it.
Right.
That was their thing.
Isn't that the right way? That's the right way.
That's the whole secret of business. Get someone else to pay for your costs.
Right.
And the rest is profit. So you have those departments. We're just going to have to see. Education could be one because the private education business that the Mercer family has been behind, and the religious conservatives are behind. They know that things are going to get reversed. The big thing that should be reversed is the student loan problems that Betsy DeVos is allowing companies that have defrauded people to collect money. That's a travesty. You hear Randy Weingarten's name as education secretary. I don't think she could get approved. Or going to be a real fight on that, being that she's a union leader, but we'll see. If you want to, you know, you talk about specifics. I think Biden has got to find a place for a guy like Andrew Yang and a guy like Pete Buttigieg. His job right now is to create a bench for the Democrats coming up behind him and get them some recognition and some achievements so that they can run later on. Those are both young men who have futures. And there should be some young women as well that he would want to put into positions. So we don't know. Right now, we do know that he's picking experienced people who know how to run things and know how the government works, because they're going to have to repair and patch up all of the damage that's been done over the last 4 years in breaking up, in Steve Bannon's world of breaking up what he calls the deep state.
Well, presumably there'll be a bunch of announcements in this coming week. And so at the next week when we meet, we can discuss what the Biden government is shaping up to be. So keep your eyes peeled for these announcements. And that's what we can talk about next week.
Yep. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
All right. Take care. Stay safe.
Bye-bye. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.